Thank you.
We are now going into radiation and Scientology and concluding this series of three lectures which are directly aimed at the subject of radiation. There are a number of things which have been learned during the past year and a half in Scientology which directly relate to radiation, and it would be a great shame not to make these things public at this time. For a Scientologist, this is very, very far from a hopeless subject. We already have data of sufficient importance and figures of sufficient reliability to demonstrate that the Scientologist, by processing and by processing of others, can very easily nullify such a minor thing as a polluted atmosphere. How does he do this? Well, we must consider radiation, as I told you in the first lecture, as something of a worry. And when a person is at a level where his general physical health is good, then this worry is not capable of depressing him into ill health. We care very little about whether there is radiation in the atmosphere or not, because a person who is in excellent physical condition does not particularly suffer from the effects of radiation. Now, that sounds like I'm saying, well, the answer to it is for everybody to get processed up to the nth degree and he'd be all set and squared around, and therefore, let's just beat the drum for more Scientology processing and let it go at that. And that sounds like I'm saying that, and that's what I'm saying. Now, the factors in Scientology which are most definitely influenced by radiation are the factors which are most definitely influenced by life. And when we try to divide a peculiar illness from the general illness of being alive, we are at once at loggerheads with the fact that man is as well as he is well, and the infinite number of factors which can make him ill. If each one had to be taken up separately and independently and distinctly with an entirely different treatment, would discover us with our noses always and forever stuck in to the newest, latest disease. You follow me? That would be our fate. Now, we don't do that. Although our noses may be stuck in the latest technique, I'll let you in on something. The latest technique has always run out and made nothing of the earlier techniques, and that's why it is the latest technique. You're not studying then a new ill. You're studying a method to eradicate the cures of former times, and the nullification of Scientology processes themselves used earlier. Not that they need nullifying, but it just so happens that that is the case. Each time we make an advance in our technology, we make an advance so that we wipe out earlier technologies in active processing. Actually, that might interest you scientifically, the exact way that a technique is tested. How good is it? How bad is it? Well, it's as good as it runs out earlier techniques. The technique which runs out another technique, a technique which eradicates and throws into restimulation and eradicates another technique, is senior to it. Wouldn't you suppose this? All right, let us say that we are treating smallpox or something of the sort, and we come up first with a serum, and We make everybody bare his biceps, and we take a large horse needle, and we hold on to them, and we shove it in them, and we shoot them with it, and so forth. And it makes their arms swell up, and they get ill, and they don't feel well. But they probably do or don't get smallpox. But that was our cure for, or prevention of, smallpox. All right, then we come along, and we decide that this stuff could be bettered, and we perfect it and refine it, and we make somebody take it by mouth, orally. And we say, now that's going to do it. All right, that's fine. And this seems to have a good workability. And then we discover something that has to do with a particular hot bath. And if we give somebody this hot bath, why, then he won't get smallpox, or it'll cure smallpox, you see. All right, let's take those three. Now, the one which is senior to the other two would run the other two out. It's quite interesting that if the hot bath technique was a good, pervasive, sweeping technique and was a considerable improvement on older techniques, when you put the man in the hot bath, he would at once feel sick at his stomach from the pill, and his arm would tend to get swollen from the old shot. Follow that? See? And then the pill and the old shot would not trouble him anymore. Now, that doesn't much happen in physical medicine, but is not unknown. And with ourselves, if we take somebody and run him through a technique known as HC, and as it goes, after a while, he begins to say, you know, by the way, a Scientologist had been looking at this all the time and had never cognited on what it was, so possibly there's somebody present has never realized what was happening. He suddenly remembers having been audited by Joe and Bill and Pete. Well, what do you think's happening there? Well, 8C, run well, is running out the techniques administered by Joe and Bill and Pete. Now, those techniques are still in evidence, but what they eradicated is gone. And the only thing that's left to run out, really, is any residue left by the technique and the technique itself. Now, to that degree, we cure cures. It's very amusing, but it's highly probable, that that's all we ever cure. It's very probable that man has had cures all up and down the track which have become the diseases of tomorrow. And if we can solve the factor of the cure that becomes a disease, which, by the way, we have solved, we are then capable of actually curing. Let's take alcohol, for instance. Do you know alcohol was once the greatest medicine that man had? It was a wonderful medicine. Anything happened to the fellow, from snake bite to a love affair, any disease. What did we do? We grabbed him by the hair of the head, stretched his throat. That's all. That was the cure. And now we have alcoholism. It's interesting that only a century and a half ago, the stores of a British man of war amounted, in terms of weight and pounds, more than 50% alcoholic beverages and less than 50% food, salt horse and dried peas. Now, that's quite fascinating. Alcohol was a tremendous thing, but here's an oddity. Today, alcohol makes people feel tired. Oh, isn't that an oddity? It's been laid in on the genetic line, evidently to such a degree that it now produces the illness which it was most used as a remedy for. Anytime you got tired, you took a drink. In past years, we conceived the genetic line, just giving genetics their due, that the blueprint is marching along, you know, and that it accumulates these things. Quite interesting, quite fascinating You talk to a geneticist and you mention something like this to him. It is definitely in the woof and warp of his own subject, but he has never realized that the experience the body line has in one generation may culminate in another generation. Even so, Darwin found out that when you took horses up to the high country in the Middle East, they would then grow long hair after a season or two. But when you took them, these long-haired horses now, back down into the low, hot country, they wouldn't get rid of the long hair, just in case, for about four generations. Ah, this is a very fascinating fact, isn't it? It tells us that the genetic line does carry a memory with it of what's happening. See, there's many proofs and incidents of this character. Well, very few people have ever added this into the field of medicine, taken it out of the line of natural selection, put natural selection into medicine. You give a drink to somebody today, he gets tired. In other words, it re-stimulates that which it was made to cure. Now, possibly on the genetic line, at some time or another, just being very far-fetched about it, radiation might have been a cure for something. And using this other principle that the cure eventually becomes the disease and eventually re-stimulates the disease it was supposed to cure, I'm sure that somewhere on the genetic line, radiation was used for a bad stomach, for a bad skin. Get the idea? And sure enough, it was and is today sunbathing. Now, what is the sun but a ball of radiation? Of course, these are photons that come down, but don't think these photons aren't hand in glove with a great deal of other radiation. Radiation is all over the place. When you lie out in the sun too long, you get a sunburn. What is a sunburn? A sunburn is not an overdose of heat. It is not an overdose of anything under the sun, but radiation. That is a radioactive ball that rides across the sky up there. In my basic physics textbook, to show you how opinions have changed when I was not in high school, they used to teach that the sun was combusting on hydrogen and that there was an inexhaustible supply of hydrogen, and they calculated the length of life of the sun on hydrogen. And this was very, very nice, but it didn't work. Because if its length of life was calculated on hydrogen, then you would get a difference in the heat of the sun from year to year because it was burning out. And this was an interesting fact that you didn't get this difference, and so the theory was eventually abandoned and people finally owned up and said, we don't know why the sun burns. And it was only until nuclear physics became dominant in men's thinking that they explained sunlight. And sunlight is occasioned by a continuous fission going on a sphere called the sun. And sunburn is a radiation burn. It's as silly as this. Now, you look at people who are burned in an atomic blast, such as they were at Hiroshima, and you were looking at the outer fringes of things that look very like sunburn. For instance, a chap was standing in front of a picket fence. And, pardon me, he was standing with his back to the picket fence, you see. And the bomb exploded way back of him somewhere. And he had sunburn where there weren't pickets. In other words, he got a burn pattern just like you'd get wearing a bathing suit. In other words, you go out and you wear a bathing suit and it covers up certain portions of you. No, they don't get sunburn. So does radiation work the same way. Well, now when radiation is drifting around in the air all the time, you're getting no direct burn. You're getting a sort of a continuous, intolerable type of burn, which is too imbalanced, and your absorption of it you find unhealthy. But nevertheless, you do have a great deal of experience with sunburn on the genetic line. Tremendous experience. And sunburn causes, occasionally, hives, red flushes, prickliness, and an upset stomach and colitis. It will even cause loss of hair. Now, this is a fascinating thing. Yeah, you girls never go out in direct sunlight when it's real hot. Very, very hot. Sunlight will happen to your hair. You generally wear something. Brunettes turn dusty and blondes turn sort of brindle. Pinto. Down in Arizona, the careless girls down there, they occasionally, why, they turn up, they look like pinto ponies. In other words, here is something with which we have experience. So it's not new and strange. There's just more of it, and it's drifting in the wrong place. For instance, the body, finding the sun shining in a room like this at this moment, says, what's this all about? Now, we've also had X-ray. X-ray, oddly enough, has been used for a cure for cancer, cure for cancer, cure for cancer, all the way up along the line. A cure for cancer? It's very interesting. It must have been in vogue for some time. For the excellent reason that X-ray causes cancer. Now, it's no surprise. After a while, if you try to cure something long enough and often enough with anything, it will eventually cause what it's trying to cure. In other words, its effectiveness will wash away. We then have to handle this cure factor. And we have that. Technique knows problems of comparable magnitude, problems of incomparable magnitude. In other words, the solution of a problem is the problem, not a solution. If you want no liability in any solution, then its solution is the problem. Now, somebody out here decides that his wife is too crazy and he takes her down to a head shrinker. I beg your pardon, that's an Americanism. Britishism is a trick cyclist. And they put big electrodes on her head and so forth, and she comes back, and what's she suffering from now? She's suffering from having been electrocuted. So one day she walks over to the light and she turns it on, but it's short-circuited and it gives her a slight shock and she's crazy all over again. I mean, this happens. It's quite common. They're using electricity in some wild, barbaric fashion in some offhanded attempt to cure this. I am actually being very stylish and in vogue today in condemning electric shock. As a matter of fact, this is no longer new. Everybody's fallen into line, and even Oxford is now condemning electric shock and released a book condemning it a few months ago. This business of curing things carries with it the liability of leaving the cure sitting there. So we're going to cure some disease by running a fellow's temperature up to 107 and leaving it there for 48 hours. And then a few years go by and something's wrong with this fellow. What's wrong with him? Well, he gets hot. You follow this? So you have to have somebody conceive of problems of comparable magnitude to the problem in order to take his fixation off the problem. And as long as he's fixated on the problem and then solves it, he continues to be fixated on the problem. You get the idea? He just put a barrier between himself and the problem. He solved it by putting in a barrier, but the problem's still there. What you've got to do is raise his tolerance for that type of problem. And the moment you've done that, you have it solved. In other words, the solution is always the problem. You have to be able to, quote, handle, quote, tolerate, quote, confront the problem. When people cannot confront the problem at all, they solve it completely. They become obsessed with the solution of it. Do you see that? All right, let's look at radiation. People can't solve it, can't confront it. Well, I should say they can't confront it. It's drifting all through the atmosphere. How are they going to solve this? Just have somebody look into space for a little while. Just say, don't look at anything. Look into space. After a while, his case is in rather poor condition. He'll get queasy. All right, we take radiation, we scatter it all over the place, and we tell everybody, look, it's floating all around in space, but you can't see it. Everybody starts going like this. And after a while, he feels queasy. In other words, we can produce to a marked degree all of the effects of radiation in Scientology with the greatest of ease, simply by a re-stimulation. All you have to do to turn on a flush is to say to somebody, now, do you recall a time when you were sunburned? He says, yes, I do. I was dreadfully sunburned once. I lay on a beach for a couple of days, and at the end of that time, why, they didn't know whether to serve me up between the middle of a cut bun or to butter me. So they buttered me. And he says, yes, I remember that. And you say, well, was that extremely painful? Oh, yes. Yes, very. Now, what did you do? What did you do to cure it? Oh, I did so-and-so, and that didn't work, and I did so-and-so, and that didn't work. And you just at that moment say, well, nothing works on that, does it? No, I guess I found that out. He'll have a sunburn. Stick him. You have to stick him in the moment of a sunburn, just as one can be made to relive past experiences, so can you be made to relive all past illnesses. And if you audited him very badly, so as not to call it auditing at all, you would leave him stuck in these moments of illness. And there you would have it. You could turn on the sunburn. Now, how about this colitis, gastroenteritis, and so forth? Just make him look into space, make him look into space, make him look into space, make him look into space. And if he's liable to get re-stimulated or upset by dangers in the atmosphere, what are you going to have? You're going to have somebody sick at his stomach. This is a test that anyone could make. In other words, if we made people look into space and attribute vast evils to space, we could make them ill, physically ill. We can demonstrate that. We don't even have to go into the whys and wherefores that it happens. But it is true. So therefore, attracting everybody's attention into space, and only into space, is liable to get him to suffer all sorts of interesting things. Space, by the way, is a re-stimulator for being sunburned, isn't it? I mean, you were usually out in the open and in the sunlight. So you make somebody conscious of the fact that he's in space, you're liable to get these various actions. Pollution of space. Danger in space. You are a total effect and you can do nothing about it. Those are the combinations which bring about this condition we know as radiation sickness, from our viewpoint as Scientologists. And we can do something about every one of them. If you were to make somebody sweat it out, and you wanted to do this, and he wasn't in too bad a condition, he was in good auditing control, all you would have to do is ask him for a problem of incomparable magnitude to radiation. He can always get one of those and build him up, and he'll probably give you a problem of comparable magnitude to radiation. And you have given him something to confront that is like radiation. And he can confront this, and you're giving him practice in confronting the unconfrontable. And we can do this. This we can do. All right, what are the other factors? Radiation is being used as a control mechanism. It's being used to control people this way and that, to do this and that. They're not supposed to go to war now. That's one of its control mechanisms. And they're supposed to obey countries that do have radiation and so forth. That's a control mechanism, isn't it? As it goes on, and by the way, it becomes more and more apparent to people that it is a control mechanism. Actually, I won't go so far as to tell you that it has been used as a control mechanism, but that happens to be a parascientological guess. Control. As long as a person is allergic to control, he will suffer from attempts to control him. You tell people, now listen, a Scientologist is somebody who controls people, environments, and situations from tone for hate. You could rewrite it this way. A Scientologist is one who, when he wishes to control people, environments, and situations, controls them only from tone 40. He does something about it. He is practical. He's very direct about it. You get the idea? That's quite different, isn't it? Well, don't you suppose that if everybody has an allergy to control and to being controlled and thinks there is something wrong with control, don't you suppose that is an aberration? Don't you suppose it's something that you should handle in an auditing session? Don't you suppose it's something you should raise the tolerance of people on? Obviously, it's a suppressing factor. They're so afraid of being controlled, they resist everything. And when they get afraid of radiation, when it's used as a control mechanism, they resist it. And it burns them. And only then does it burn. They have to resist it. They have to say, I don't like that. Don't let it near me. And then all of a sudden they fry. Now you can conduct this experiment. You can take somebody you don't like, and say, isn't it terrible about this radiation? Isn't it terrible? Think of all this air around here in this room at this moment being full of little invisible particles that are just chewing you to bits. He says, yeah. Yeah, I get the idea. I don't know why I'm itching, though. People right now, having heard the first lecture, have an itchy back. That's right. It'll pass away rather rapidly. Why? We call attention to this stuff. That's all. However, if calling attention to it produces a reaction to it, and as sooner or later somebody is going to have his attention called to it rather forcefully, don't you suppose that it's better to call her attention to it than not? Yes. All right. Now, here's control. If people are allergic to control, it's then something they ought to settle with themselves. A person can only be controlled against his will so long as he is allergic to control. So long as it is against his will. A person who is very, very bland about the whole subject, who doesn't mind being controlled, who does not conceive there's some tremendous danger to him in being controlled, can one be controlled as easily as a little toy? And two, can knock off that control as easily as a giant. He has power of choice over control. I never understood why, when I was audited by an auditor, myself, that I never got into trouble with auditors. It didn't matter whether the auditor was untrained, newly trained, something. They audited me. There was no difficulty as far as I was concerned. Yeah, they sort of leave me stuck on the track. Once in a while, I get into other difficulties with them, but they were just their difficulties. I did what they said. I didn't worry about it. I knew they couldn't get me into very much trouble. I had a certain security. I was not worried about this. I had confidence in the subject, no great fear of the mind, because I'd looked at it. And the fellow would say to me, all right, I'll go back to birth. And so on, I'd go back to birth. What's wrong with that? He'd forget to tell me to come up to present time. I could always wait until after the session was over and tell birth to go back to the past. There was no great liability in it because I wasn't afraid of what he'd do to me. Because the truth of the matter is, he wasn't going to do anything to me. But I didn't have that determinism either. Every once in a while, somebody audits me, and he goes out and he tells people, you know, Ron is about the easiest fellow to audit you ever audited, but he's awfully, awfully cranky at times. What they're talking about is I do what they say, and they think I'm pedantic. I do exactly what they say. Exactly. In other words, I don't try to make a session out of it or change it or alter. Don't start self-auditing in the middle of the session, don't you see? The fellow says, can you move your right foot? And I say, yep. He says, well, go ahead. I say, which direction? No, go ahead and move your right foot. All right. It's all right. Now he says, can you move your left foot? I say, yes. He says, what's the matter with you? I don't know. What's the matter with me? He says, well, you're not doing what I say. And I said, I'm sorry. Always be courteous. I didn't know that you had told me to do anything. He said, yes, I did. I told you to move your left foot. I say, you did? And he said, yes. And I said, well, all right. And he says, well, why don't you move your foot? He has yet to give me the auditing command. There is no control factor present unless I put one there. And if I put one there, there's an intermediary control, isn't there, that has nothing to do with the auditor and nothing to do with me. So he finally gets it through his skull that when he tells me to move my left foot, I will. So he says, oh, I get it. Move your left foot. And I say, okay. Now, once in a while, somebody gets his temper ruffled or something like that. And if at that moment I resisted his control, I would later on find that I had a nice big facsimile mental image picture of that session at that moment. Yeah? I'm not setting myself up as any paragon of virtue. If I set myself up as anything, it would be as somebody easy to audit. And I'd get more auditing. Actually, this is just propaganda. Anyway, as long as controls and directions and orders and postulates are resisted, a person then has a tendency to lock up with them. And what do you think a circuit is? What do you think one of these ridges are? What do you think of these other electronic phenomena in the mind? What do you think these things are? They are simply resisted orders. And who keeps them there? Will you do? How do you keep them there? By resisting them. The moment you don't no longer resist them, they're gone. You see, what happened to them? How is it that a man can suffer from having lived as many years as he lived with his father when his father is no longer present? This is an oddity. The fellow's going around doing the things that his father did, and he's not quite sure who he is or where he is and so on. How could he possibly be in this condition because his father isn't present, unless somehow or another he has suspended in his beingness his father's behavior pattern? And how has he suspended that? By resisting his father, of course. Papa probably ran very bad 8C. Papa said, go down to the pub and get me a small beer. No. No, don't do that. Well, what are you sitting there for? I told you to go down to the corner and get a small beer. The kid says, wait a minute. What is this? It's a confusion, that's what it is. It wasn't control, but it certainly looked like it. The fellow, after a while, resists confusion, gets confused, decides the only unconfused point to be in a confusion is father, and takes on some of his identity. After that, he's not confused, he's just nuts. All right, these mechanisms we're familiar with. We're familiar with these mechanisms. Resistance to a thing brings about, one way or the other, a closure of terminals with the thing to such a degree that an individual then obeys it and doesn't know he's obeying it or what he is obeying, and that is more or less aberration. You don't like what somebody's doing on the street, he's beating up a girl or something like that. What do? You close terminals with him, don't you? You have to walk over to him. In other words, you resist his actions or emotions. And so you close terminals mentally with your environment. All right? If this stuff called radiation is used as a control factor, then a person is made to close terminals with something which his body cannot tolerate. But it is the person who is closing that terminal, not the body. And that is our foremost discovery. As long as we have an orientation on the subject of radiation, as long as we are no longer resisting it, as long as we're no longer upset about it, and particularly if we are in fair condition with regard to space, spaciousness, so forth, if we've not got claustrophobia or something like that, then we really don't have much trouble with radiation. Now, that's the first thing that we learned in Scientology, because believe me, this organization knows a great deal about radiation, since it was only 250 miles from 100-and-some atomic bomb tests that were made in Nevada. The central headquarters of this organization were moved from Arizona only because grand pianos began to count like uranium mines. We were afraid people were going to dash into the living room at any moment and start mining the safe. Because it counted, too. Everything was live and radioactive. The dust blew you in the face at night, and you'd have a sunburn. But there was no sun. Now, that's just too much radiation. So we had a lot of experience with this, so we found out something very peculiar. We found out those people who were in good condition were not in restimulation with regard to radiation, and those people who were in bad condition would get something that would hardly count on a Geiger counter and get sick at their stomachs. And those cases that were straightened out got no further repercussion from radiation. What technique was used? Just auditing. Auditing brings about a tolerance of the physical universe. You have to tolerate it. Now, the next thing that was learned is that you never audit a particle. That is news to you. Just never audit a particle. Always audit a terminal. Just don't have anything to do with particles. Normally, they are things which come off of terminals. And if you solve the terminal, you solve the particle. If you try to solve the particle without solving the terminal, you get sick. So, it has to do with the terminal. You solve problems with the nearest terminal to the particle. This is interesting in terms of words. If it was mother that told you that all women were alike and gave you marital trouble, or if it was mother who told you that all men were alike and so gave you marital trouble, all you have to do is mock up mother and make her a little more solid a few times, and her words appear and blow away. Now, what is that but a particle? The symbols she emitted, when reassigned to her, give you a release from them. Those are particles. Now, just consider this whole thing about words, phrases, meanings, significances, particles, all in the same breath. They are solved by addressing terminals. As soon as you can get somebody on a straight wire, you're just asking people questions about their past, and you say, they say, oh, I just have a terrible headache. Works a certain percentage of the time. All you have to do is ask them, do you know anybody who had a headache? Big calm lag. They finally say, well, my father had headaches all the time. Oh, he did? Well, you remember an exact moment when your father had a headache? Yes. Good, you say. Look around the room. He does. You say, how's your headache? I haven't got one. This works enough of the time. When it doesn't work, he has so resisted father's headache that when you ask him to remember it, he gets stuck looking at father with a headache. He doesn't have his own headache. He has father's. Now, anybody, any layman, like a Scientologist, can make this experiment because he's working around people who have all sorts of interesting things wrong with them. Fellow comes in and he's got a black eye, and you say, do you recall anybody who ever had a black eye? And he says, yes, me. You say, you recall a time when you had a black eye? He said, yes. Last night. You say, any other time when you had a black eye? No, I never before had a black eye. Never in my life had a black eye. Never, never. Nobody ever gave me a black eye. But do you recall another black eye? No, the one I gave my brother when I was a little kid. Yeah. You say, well, do you remember the exact moment when you did that? Yes, I do. I felt awfully bad about it. Well, look around the room. Right here. How's your black eye? It's diminished. See, this is the necromancy involved, the magic involved with it. What do? You make him look at source. And listen, particles were never sources. Terminals are sources. So you make people look at terminals, don't make them look at particles. When you have them make things a little more solid, you make sure they make a terminal a little more solid, and they will stop worrying about particles. This is an interesting datum, but one which has been developed out of this work. Anybody working in the field of the mind learns dozens of these tricks. We have dozens of them. We do all sorts of weird things. Now, the other thing is the spot where you work on the known location, not the unknown location. A fellow came in one day, he'd been driving past one of these explosive bomb sites, and his eyes were all swollen up, and he had practically run into both sides of the street driving into the place because he had been driving past the bomb explosion site at some distance away when he saw the flash on the horizon, and at once his face swelled, his eyes swelled, and he was in terrible condition. He felt very badly about it. He just had propped his eyes open just enough to get back to Phoenix. And he walked in and he says, "For God's sake, somebody audit me." So I said, "Well, where'd you see it? Where are you? Where'd you see it? Where are you? Where'd you see it? Where are you? Where'd you see it? Where are you?" No swollen eyes and no face. Difficult. You see that? Spot the location. That's the other one. Now, we know those as assists. They're very simple, very elementary, nothing much to them, and they do work. I don't say that they would work on a major, major burn, but they certainly work on something like a secondary flash. All right, so much for that. If we have solved it to that degree, we have individual auditing, just in general, as a basic solution. How about group auditing? Well, group auditing solves this control factor. It solves the communication factor to a marked degree, just conducted as itself, group auditing. It works, in other words, in proofing up on this radiation factor. Now, the reaction to radiation in persons who have been given Scientology processing is, by actual test, much lower than those that have not received it. Now, we've conducted some experiments in that direction, and it's quite interesting. Now, we would find it difficult and even antipathetic to get everybody together and give them a lot of group auditing and polish them all up so they wouldn't be affected by radiation. This would be quite a project. 2.5 billion people. We say, well, why don't we take the easy route and do like the medical profession does and shoot them with stuff? Is there anything with which you could shoot a person that would do something to him radioactively? Yes, there is. There are several preparations which prevent radiation. And one of these, they're getting rather common now. And progress is being made on the whole subject. Here's something from The New Scientist of the 28th of March, 1957, by Dr. Peter Alexander, Protection Against Radiation. And he tells us that working independently, several people have found that the harmful effects of radiation can be reduced by injecting some quite simple chemicals before exposure to the rays. And the comment on the whole article is, could medicines be used to protect against the effects of radiation? A short time ago, such a suggestion would have been thought absurd. Today, chemical protection is the subject of much research. We were leading the van on this. We already knew something. We knew that old-time nicotinic acid re-stimulated and ran out sunburns, and that a person who had been given nicotinic acid actually did not receive a continuous effect from it. Now, anybody can make this test, and it so happens that there is an incorrect entry in both the British and American pharmacopoeias, and that says that nicotinic acid, old-style, not new niacinamide, nicotinic acid turns on a flush. In overdose, is therefore toxic. That is not correct. That is not correct. People who take nicotinic acid in overdoses, you have to take about 90 grains of it to kill yourself, so it's some tremendous, that's a handful like that. But people who take this do get red and prickly. And that's all it says in the pharmacopoeia concerning it. Now, that's a fascinating thing, that it would be that deficient in information. Could it be that these people never looked? Because that isn't what it does at all. In a large number of the cases, it doesn't turn on flush at all. It turns on hives. In a large number of cases, it turns on gastroenteritis. In a large number of cases, it turns on aching bones. And in many cases, it turns on a fearful, terrified condition. Not a physical reaction at all. Here's a variable reaction from something toxic. And what sort of a toxic pill is it, if you please, which, when administered over a period of time, is no longer toxic? Even though all the time it's being administered, it is over the top of toleration. The body cannot tolerate the amount of it which is being administered, and after a while, it no longer has any effect. That's a crazy one. Unless you know Dianetics and Scientology, it doesn't make any sense at all. What does nicotinic acid do? Nicotinic acid runs out sunburns. And when you give it to a person originally, he might say as a virgin. And he gets gorgeous sunburns. He just turns red as a beet. If you were to ask him what he was looking at, ask him, close his eyes and ask him what he's looking at, he's looking at a beach or something while this is running out, you see? And you keep him on a regimen of this every day, and after a while, two things happen. One, he no longer gets sick when nicotinic acid is administered to him. And two, he doesn't have a bad reaction from sunburn. In fact, it gets a little bit difficult to burn. We made the test with sun lamps and found out that his ability to be burned was improved by the administration of nicotinic acid and the running out of past burns. This is radiation. And one day I was walking down the street wondering with some of the boys, and I was wondering what on earth there might be on this subject, and I suddenly remembered the series of tests which we made clear back in 1950, and this funny thing we had found out about nicotinic acid. And this was a strange thing. And it was in total disagreement with the pharmacopoeia. But anybody, any medical, any biochemist could make the same experiment. He would administer a couple of hundred milligrams of this per day to somebody, and he would watch all of these different manifestations, which aren't recounted in the pharmacopoeia, and he would watch them damp out and eventually disappear and not recur. Until you administered 500 a day for several days running, and 500 a day would turn it all on again a little bit. And now we give him 1,000 a day for several days, and we find out there's just a tiny little bit left. And now we give him 2,000, we get no effect. We can feed people this toxic drug, known as nicotinic acid, without any effect whatsoever. That doesn't look to me like a toxic drug, does it to you? Well, anybody could make this experiment, so we're on very, very safe ground with regard to it. And having suddenly remembered this series of experiments, I went and dug them up in the files of the Hubbard Dianetic Research Foundation and thought, well, that's fascinating. And we had a brave volunteer. Electronics people are always willing to volunteer on things like this. And he took nicotinic acid over a period of many, many days, couple of weeks. And sure enough, our old experiments were bearing out, with one exception. The reactions per dose were 5 and 6 times as violent as they had been in 1950. So we got a hold of some people that had been flat on nicotinic acid in 1950, and we gave them some courses all over again, and we found out that the sunburns they had run out in 1950 did not run out, but they got stuck Vizios of the countryside around Phoenix. And they got sick at their stomachs a little bit. They were better off than other people, but they got an entirely different reaction. We ran that out. And the Washington staff was quite heroic. At that moment, they began to swallow pills in various dosages, always willing to experiment. And we finally added it into an old dosage known as gunk, a horrible concoction, enough pills that, Fellow says, well, you take all that, you can't get it in your mouth. We know quite a bit about this. We know, for instance, the administration of B1 and some other preparations accelerate the discharge of mental image pictures. We know somebody who's given B1 more easily runs for the next 50 minutes or so, mental image pictures. He sees them better and so forth. We know that people who have nightmares given B1 are relieved of these nightmares. We know that delirium tremens and so forth is relieved of B1. In other words, B1 has a positive reaction on the subject of delusion. So we added that into the package and stabilized it, but there is something that everybody should know about B1, that when taken in large doses, all by itself, it knocks your teeth out of your head. Something that no pharmaceutical house has told anyone about. We learned it the hard way. We learned this, by the way, in 50. Learned it better in 53. We made a lot of experiments along this line. Tremendous amount of research has gone into this. We finally isolated those chemicals which are apparently the most effective. B1 is one of them. But B1 has to be backed up by two other vitamins, otherwise it is deadly. B1 is more deadly to take by itself than nicotinic acid ever will be, in spite of the violent reaction, obvious, of nicotinic. Because B1, taken all by itself, is a quiet, sneaky reaction of knocking all your teeth out of your head and pulling your bones dry of calcium. It must have calcium. It is calcium hungry. And calcium, to go into the bloodstream and to work well, must have ascorbic acid, vitamin C. Therefore, we have these three things which cannot be taken, one independent of another. And I'm telling you something now that Park and Davis and the rest of the big drug houses need a little bit of a slap on the wrist for never having experimented with or developed. But we, again, should not be mad at these fellows simply because we know more than they do. But these three things, these people are not, they're always finding out that this drug is bad, that has been administered for years, needs other drugs. B1 must be administered with, whenever you take it, evidently, ascorbic acid and calcium. The dosages, by the way, which go together on those three things, just those three things all by themselves, is B1, if taken at the rate of 25 to 50 milligrams, which is quite a dose of B1, must be taken with at least 10 to 15 grains of dicalcium phosphate and 2 to 300 milligrams of vitamin C, ascorbic acid. Now, though that ratio is necessary. Otherwise, you lose your teeth. This stuff is given rather irresponsibly today out in the society because they don't know too much about it. All right. Now, nicotinic acid will work all by itself. It doesn't have to be backed up by anything else. It simply works faster with what we call a guck bomb in the foundation. Guck is what the soldiers use to clean their rifles, you know. It's dreadful stuff, so we call this stuff guck. And it could be taken all by itself, and if it were taken, it would be taken in this fashion of just 200 milligrams. These are just reports of experiments I'm making here. I'm not advising you to do anything. 200 milligrams of nicotinic acid once a day at the same time of the day. Every day, 200 milligrams of nicotinic acid. For how long? Oh, I don't know, 30 days. Something on that order. But the length of time would actually be until it's flat. The amount of reaction you'll get from radiation at the end of that time isn't worth worrying about. But, it doesn't work too well and will give you nightmares if you don't take it with the guck. So let's throw the guck in there. And we would get a formula, something of this character. Nicotinic acid, 200 milligrams. Dicalcium phosphate, 15 to 20 grains. Usually is accompanied by vitamin D or gastrol. Iron, in the form of ferrous gluconate, 10 grains. Sulfate is not quite as good. B1, 25 milligrams. Riboflavin, which is vitamin B2, 50 milligrams. That is used on the treatment of pellagra and so forth. And ascorbic acid, 2 to 500 milligrams, somewhere in between there. It doesn't have to be perfect. That's the formula of dianazine as it was finally leveled out and established. I'll go over that again. You just might be interested. It's nicotinic acid, 200 milligrams, dicalcium phosphate, 15 to 20 grains, iron, ferrous gluconate, 10 grains, B1, 25 milligrams, riboflavin, 50 milligrams, ascorbic acid, vitamin C, 2 to 500 milligrams, and that is dianazine. And that is the wildest stuff you ever tangled with. That's a wild one. More physical sensation than you've run into in many a day. Why isn't it the best thing? Well, it's a cure. It does something. Auditing eventually runs it out. Auditing is much better than this dosage. But if you didn't have anything else, this would be quite interesting. Now, this does all sorts of wild things. It runs out radiation in all forms and shapes and sizes, or what appears to be radiation, proofs a person up against it to some degree. I'm not giving it to you as anything but the highest level of development which has been attained at this time on biochemical knockdown of radiation. And that's all it is. It's just the highest level we've reached at this time. Now, it does some interesting things. It turns on and runs out incipient cancer. We've seen it do it. Skin cancer. Fellow didn't have very much liability to skin cancer, just a few little moles and things like that. Feeding this dianazine, all of a sudden, why, his whole jaw turns into a raw mass of cancer, the most ghastly thing you ever saw. He keeps on with it, and the next thing you know, it boils right on down to nothing. We were looking at a case of cancer that might have happened, and it evidently ran out. Now, we've seen this, you see. Colitis, somebody had a little bit of colitis. It worried him a trifle. From time to time, we feed him dianazine. He suddenly starts bleeding from the intestines. He gets very upset. It knocks him into a cocked hat. He keeps on with dianazine, comes out at the other end with exactly no colitis. What was he facing? He was facing an eventual colitis of a fatal nature, hemorrhages. But we ran it out. Now, that does these odd things, which are all radiation manifestations. In other words, we do have a chemical reaction to it. There is an auditing reaction to it, and the best auditing is done in the absence of dianazine. Don't take dianazine and audit, you know. Don't audit people full of dianazine because it's just going every which direction. This is taken once a day only with milk and some chocolate. And why am I saying to you milk and some chocolates? Because you don't eat well enough to stand up to it. See? That's fact. You don't eat well enough to stand up. The level of food intake from country to country varies, and we found that those people who didn't eat too much in the way of rations got a very poor reaction to this, you understand? And this, therefore, was something that we had to take into account, so we experimented a little bit, and we found this interesting fact that if you gave it with milk and some chocolate or any glucose of some sort, it worked faster. And we found that it worked on people that it didn't work on when we did give them some milk and glucose. So we took it along with those things and it worked itself out. In other words, those people who are the poorest fed would be the most susceptible, evidently, to radiation. All right, is there any other factor involved here? Well, there could be thousands of factors involved. We haven't yet begun to fight along this particular line, but I will tell you that in auditing procedure, CCH, with the added command of making the earth a little more solid, handles radiation, the like of which you never heard of. because evidently, speaking from parascientology, people have lost too many planets already because of radiation. And if we're alert and if we do our job, there's no reason to worry about radiation now, at this time particularly, but there is our same old worry about the case level and the health level of the peoples of Earth. And if we continued along in this same direction, why, we would also win in the form of radiation. Who knows but what we wouldn't get a plague tomorrow that would knock everybody flat. I assure you it would be the people who were worried and in a bad state of health who would get knocked flat first. So if you want to get over the top of a plague, whether man-made or bug-made, why, audit them. Now that seems to me to be just about all I can tell you offhand that you would find of use to you in understanding and in handling the subject of radiation. Thank you very much.